Our class tonight, and it's not really, I don't even want to call it a class yet, our focus tonight is going to be on the challenges that one has when one regroups with one's family after studying and learning in yeshiva. And I want to do this in a slightly unconventional way. I want to go around the room and hear what you guys have to say. Last time we did this class, I gave a class, and then at the end of class we opened the floor for questions and comments, and the comments were so valuable that I decided that this time I better wisen up and hear what you guys have to say. And then if I have something to add, so then I'll try to add it. So let's just introduce the ideas we're discussing. Basically, what usually happens is as follows. I'll read you a letter I wrote a few years ago when I got a depressing series of letters from guys who left Mahon Meir to visit their families. In the past 24 hours, I was approached with this question twice, so I feel it necessary to express my thoughts, though I do not deem myself worthy of dealing with this question. I, Baruch Hashem, come from an observant home, so I've never experienced this situation. This puts me at a disadvantage. Everything I'm writing stems from theory and observation, which makes me wonder what my thoughts are worth. But being that the question is being raised time and again, I'm writing my thoughts. I warn the reader to evaluate before deeming these words worthwhile. God blessed us that every person born has two parents. In most circumstances, they will be around for much of one's life. They nourish us physically and emotionally. As we mature, hopefully we become physically and emotionally independent. Nonetheless, our parents continue to be a source of emotional nourishment. Though a healthy adult can stand without his parents, he is emotionally independent. A healthy adult is emotionally independent. He still gets emotional supplements, if we could call them that, from his parents. Our bond to our parents is deeply embedded within us. It goes to the core of who we are. Though people choose paths completely dissimilar to those of their parents are still a part of them. One may be angry at one's parents. One may be at opposite poles with one's parents, philosophically, religiously, and politically. But they are still one's parents. They are still entrenched within one's essence. One is often unconscious of how deep-rooted one's connection is to one's parents. This concept applies to many aspects of our psyche. However, currently we are dealing with one aspect, the internal need to connect to parents. Most children want to live with their parents. This is normal. Sometimes there are abnormal conditions. Sometimes parents are abusive, sadistic, mentally ill. In these instances, the system will sometimes take children out of their parents' care for their own protection. One would think that a child who has been badly abused would want to be away from home. We would expect that this child would want to find a foster home. We would expect that he would be thankful to the system that takes him away from his injured parents. Quite surprisingly, frequently, the opposite is true. Children often fight the system that tries to protect them. Children testify in court against the foster system in their attempts to return to their violent parents. The inner need to be joined with their parents is far stronger than their intellect or feelings of physical pain. The fact that being in close proximity with the parent is detrimental to their health is overshadowed by their inner drive to be close to their parents. It is shocking to see the awesome intensity of this inner drive. If this is true of children from abusive parents, we can infer that it is indeed true for us. We have an internal need to maintain the bond with our parents. We find that Yosef was viceroy of Egypt, the greatest empire of his times. He was wheeling and dealing and literally saving the world. And yet, when the opportunity arose, he immediately wished to see his father again, to reconnect. The need is potent, irrespective of a person's age or success in life. After acknowledging this innate need, we are going to try to address the difficulties in maintaining this relationship when people's paths have diverged from their parents' paths. A person who chooses to become Jewish has this challenge. A person who adopts an observant lifestyle also must contend with this challenge. I stress the innate need for this connection so that the reader will be at ease with himself or herself as to these feelings. The question remains, however, as to how to balance the contact with one's parents vis-a-vis one's personal growth. One feels a need to connect with one's parents, and yet that connection can be quite detracting to one's spiritual growth. It is important to recognize that when we come into close proximity with our parents, it affects us. Maybe we'll... Okay, should we finish the paragraph? Okay, years of work and personal growth can sometimes seem to unravel. It can seem as though we are, quote, under influence. In some instances, our parents can send a jolt into our system that causes us to question if we are being real in our ordinary lives. When by our parents we slip into our old roles, which feel natural to us, and suddenly we question whether our day-to-day roles were altogether real. The life I was leading before I came back home, was that real? But this feels more natural. This is the way I'm used to being. We ask ourselves if perhaps we were living in a dream world. A person suddenly is faced with a question. Wait a second, what's real? This is what I'm used to. That's what I thought I believed in. But now that feels fake. A person chooses to adopt a religious lifestyle. After 5 years of keeping kosher and keeping Shabbos, he goes to visit his parents. They don't keep kosher or Shabbos. He walks into the house and finds his favorite bacon chips adorning his favorite salad. Suddenly, it feels unnatural not to eat that salad. He refrains, but starts feeling unnatural. This is the home he grew up in. It feels so natural to sit with his parents for dinner. It feels unnatural to refrain from eating many of the things that they eat. When Shabbos sets in, he refrains from turning on lights, etc. They invite him to the movies. He politely turns them down. They all pack into the car. He remembers how he once used to join them and enjoy. He holds his ground. They live a different life. He once used to lead a life like that. Then he looks and sees they are so happy. He starts remembering the pleasures of living like them. Let's fast forward. He returns from his visit, returns to his life, and suddenly things just aren't the same. Suddenly he isn't as happy as he used to be in his life. Suddenly, he asks himself, is this for real? Where he once exuded confidence, he now feels doubt. Is all of this for real? He suddenly does not feel the satisfaction he once felt. He feels lacking. He feels lonely and doubtful. These feelings are normal and can be understood. However, that's not our purpose here. We are dealing with the challenge of balancing the need for contact with one's parents or relatives or friends with its detrimental byproducts. So, this is the beginning of the letter. This letter is a product of many years seeing many breaks come to Mahon Meir, seeing guys leaving after they've had great accomplishments, and seeing them come back and trying to rebuild what unraveled, and very often finding it nearly impossible. I don't want to have a class on this. I want to hear what you guys have to say, what you think are the challenges we should discuss tonight, and what you think are solutions, because what happened in the last class we had on this was that the guys themselves came up with solutions I would have never thought of. They also came up with problems I would have never thought of. So maybe we'll go around the classroom and every person could mention, let's say we'll give each person up to 5 minutes, what he thinks are the challenges and some of the solutions that one has found. So yeah, Gidon, we'll start with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually... not about going home because I made Aliyah and everything. But
let's wait and see what other guys have to say, but let's try from now on to leave the individuals anonymous. Meaning, let's say, I understand. Right, okay. I'm saying Just it'll probably be easier for us to say things if we don't know who we're talking about. Okay, is there any other point you want us to discuss?
No, that was...
Let's say there. Yeah.
I concur with what Gideon said, but also if one makes aliyah and your parents are secular and they're kind of left back home in the States or wherever, these are far distances, and essentially you kind of cut yourself off from, I mean, their lives, so to speak. It's not so easy if they're going to stay there. Thank God we have Skype and so forth, so it's easy to maintain contact and video contact, but you really, if you come from a very tight relationship with them, and then, all of a sudden through a period of years, and you move over here, it can be a great divide. And how to bridge that gap, I think, is hard, because at least in my experience, I know that there's, the more and more that, I really love studying Torah and so forth. I really love this lifestyle. I feel like it's a very good match, and it's like the less almost I can talk with them.
It's
the less I can actually talk with them. Like, I know with my sister, it's even almost there's just nothing to talk about anymore, because you don't want to force anything down there into their lives. So.
Okay, so I want to try and address that before I forget.
Yeah.
My age, I've got to worry about that. So I think that
isn't there some sort of like obligation that you might have? I mean, like, they brought you up, you want to
submit to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you still want to like be part of their lives, they're getting older, and it's just like, how do you really fulfill that commandment of honoring parents and so forth if you're not there to do it?
Okay.
I mean, so it's a great mitzvah to live in Israel. But
One step at a time. I guess we'll begin with the last point you made. How do you maintain the fulfillment of Kibbur Av? The Talmud records a story. In Kiddushin, the Talmud discusses the mitzvahs that a son has towards his father, of Kibbur Av Aim, among others. And the Talmud says there was a guy whose mother, she was an old woman, she was a widow. And she says, I want you to find me a spouse. So he goes and finds a guy that would be willing to marry her. So she says, I want you to find me someone as good looking as you, someone as good as you. So he realized that she's already losing it, and he's never going to be able to keep her happy. So he packed his bags and left Eretz Yisrael. And he arranged for some Philippine woman or whatever, I don't know, some whoever was doing the work, the hired help thing. He arranged for someone to help his mother and take care of her needs. So we see that if you're in a different continent and they have their needs taken care of, your obligation to keep it avim is different. It's not like it was when you were there. I'm just saying, let's begin with that point of... I'm saying, yeah.
Emotional needs.
Oh, so that we'll get to now. I think that, we have a shelf in our house where we leave the gifts that we buy for our relatives in America. Whenever someone tells me they're going to visit, sorry, listener, where my parents live, I have a shelf. If I'll go to the store and I'll see something that I know will make my father happy or my mother happy or a sibling happy, so I'll get the stuff, and then I have it ready, and then when I have an opportunity, I send it. Another good thing to do is send letters, not emails. No, there's pen, paper, an envelope, and a stamp. Once upon a time, there was this service called the Postal Service. It's still around. And if you send a letter, it has much more meaning than an email. Now, these are things that will maintain a connection that's different than what you had until now. If you want to develop your connection, so, in life, when we grow, if the world doesn't grow with us, so it's a little bit of a problem to maintain things the way they were. Like you said, what are we going to talk about? So what you could talk about, what you could do, is find something that you could study together. Take the Jewish stories that we learn here. Take stories that it doesn't have to be religious content. It could be moral content. And then what you're technically doing is, I did this for a period also. You set up a chavrusa by phone. I had a period where I had a chavrusa with my brother by phone. And we'd look the same text, and we could at least learn the same text. But even if not, I had a chavrusa at one point with my mother, where I had the text, and I was explaining. A person can have a relationship, and the relationship will grow around the learning. And don't go into controversial topics. Take things that are non-controversial. So you're not happy with what I'm telling you. You're saying it's not practical.
No, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that everything, to me, it's like, yes, everything for is very positive for me here, you know, and it's more just about me, you know, and I just, you know, there's a part of me that's like, well, everything shouldn't just be about you per se. I don't know, like.
So we say, we make a divide. We say in the physical world, you have to look how you could help others. In the spiritual world, you have to grow yourself. Meaning, if it's a question of, should you have an extra $50 or send it to them? So then we say, if you can manage, send it to them. Anything physical, there we say, don't be focused on yourself. But in the spiritual world, a person has to care for others. He shouldn't just be self-centered. But he also has to realize that, im eina nili mili, if I don't take care of myself, no one else is going to do the spiritual growth for me. You can't.
I guess to put it another way, like, is it an error to be here and, you know, growing spiretually and, you know, God willing, starting a family and even having like a good job, like everything's very positive here, you know. But you know, but again, still just having them, you know, out, you know, thousands of miles away, and you try to make it over there sometimes, and you try to have them over, but you know, right. I mean, it's yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can. I mean, yeah, a person has two choices in life. He can stay there, and he won't grow, or he could grow here. It's not like. You know, it's not like you can do both. It doesn't work. If you were like Yisro, you were the head of the family, then you could go back and tell them, guys, this is what I've learned. Come listen and convince them. And then you come back a few months later, and they're all with you, and you settle in the land of Israel. But I don't know of many Yisros in the world. I know of one. And even he, it's a machlokas in Chazal, whether he ever made it back or not. It's a machlokas. According to one opinion, he didn't. Even Yisro, with all his knowledge. So, and that's the last point that I think every person who makes Aliyah has to know. One of the things that the Talmud says that are acquired through pain, not easily, is the land of Israel. Talmud says Torah, Eretz Yisrael, those are things that they don't come easy, and they come with a price. Precious things have a price tag on them. It's not easy. And I could tell you, I'm here already for over a decade. It's not easy. It's not. No one's saying it's easy. But as you build your own family, what usually happens is, even if you'd be living in the United States, your focus shifts from your parents and your siblings to your wife and your children. That's the way of the world, like the Talmud says. Rachamei av al ben, the father, his mercy and his love goes to his son. Rachamei ben, and the mercy and the love of the son, al bno, is for his own son. That's the way of the world. So today, you're not yet married. You don't yet have a family here. Bezat Hashem, pretty soon, you'll have a family here. And you'll see, after a few years, God should bless you with children. And you'll see that it gets easier in that regard. Parents are still parents. But let's hear what other guys have to say. Maybe other guys have better answers. Probably guys have better answers than mine. Yeah, Yosef.
Okay. A difficulty that I think situation for me personally that's going to arise around this coming trip is when you have those family members that are really far away and they make their efforts in the most genuine way and feel obliged by that, and at the same time you know that they're very set on their ways and they don't comprehend the reasons behind it, the logic behind it, the beauty behind it. But because they want to make you happy and they want to keep you close, they try to make as much of concessions as possible. No concessions, right? And at the same time, since halacha is so wide, so unapplicable, you come with more and more demands. And for me, it's the frustration that I'm not able to explain these things to them, especially people that are much older. To be able to come to them and try to explain to them the reasons behind this halakha, but even most Jews most people, we don't understand the reasons behind them. And this frustration really of never being able to explain it to them, and wanted to, right, and seeing their genuine efforts that are constantly being more and more, and the implications of this.
Okay, so a few months ago, I got a phone call from the mother of one of the guys who learned here. He did Giyur, and his mother wasn't Jewish. And she says to me, look, my son's been coming over for a few years now, and he won't let me bake or cook anything for him. And please tell him, she asked me, that pork isn't the worst sin in the world. And I'll clean out my pots after I make the pork for myself, and I'll make him a pancake with flour and water. What could be non-kosher about that? So Rabbi, I'm calling you to convince my son that he should eat in my house and let me make him pancakes at least when he comes for breakfast. So how do you answer that, Yosef? You know, she's calling you as we have a good relationship. I try to keep a good relationship with all the parents. We have a good relationship, and you see, she doesn't begin to understand what we're talking about. Like, So what makes it more difficult, I think you'll agree, is that she has good intentions. What does she want? She wants to make her son breakfast, right? So I think that we have to know how to elegantly get the following message across. Let's agree to disagree without arguing. Meaning, let's agree that we can respect one another, and we don't necessarily understand one another, but we'll be respectful and know that we're just different. And this is a key to many conversations in life. Let's take a point just as an aside. You guys cannot be the spokesman for Judaism. They're going to come and tell you, well, tell me, why do you have to eat kosher? What's the logic behind that? And anyways, one drop of pork in your soup, is that really going to make a difference? And why do you trust these rabbis anyways? You don't know enough. I'll tell you the truth. I hate when I have to be the spokesman for Judaism. One of the things I shiver for. 2 weeks, I'm always scared. Come the morning after Thursday, I know I have 2 weeks to be scared of next week Thursday. When you guys ask questions and I'm supposed to have an answer. It's not easy, and you'll notice that very often I say, I don't know. I know our listeners must be shocked, because in the question-answer file, you have hundreds of questions and answers, and they don't know how many hundreds of I don't know we could have in there also. A lot of questions I don't know the answer to. We have to be comfortable with the truth, and that is that we have a certain connection with Judaism, we have an appreciation of the truth in Judaism, and we don't have all the answers. And we recognize that we don't, and we won't be able to get all the answers in a short amount of time. One of the challenges of teaching teenagers is that, prove it to me now, or I don't believe it's true. That's a teenager. As we mature, suddenly we realize you can't conquer the world in 2 seconds. It's not going to work. So I think it's fair to try and build a relationship which respects, this is the way it is. This is the lifestyle I've adopted. I'm not trying to force it down your throat, and I'm not asking you to make compromises. Now, a grandparent will say, I baked you your favorite chocolate chip cookies. You always loved my chocolate chip cookies. And now a grandson has a problem. He can't eat it. She's not Jewish. She cooked it. Let's assume the ingredients are kosher. She says, go check the ingredients. Nonetheless, she turned on the fire. She did all the baking. He still has the same issues. He has some of the issues. Is the oven kosher? He has a lot of issues. The oven's not kosher. So I think that a person has to here play both sides of the fence. On the one hand, a favor was done on his behalf. The grandparent took time and invested time. And a person sometimes confuses their conviction to Judaism with their love for their relative or their respect for their relative. And a person feels like they can't say something positive because then they might end up saying, and then I'll eat it. That's not true. What a person would probably say, if he thought about it logically in advance, is, Grandma, that's so amazing. You make the most fantastic chocolate chip cookies in the world. Grandma, I can't believe you took the time, you went out and you bought the flour, you bought the chocolate chips, and you made me these cookies. And Grandma, you have no idea how bad I feel that I can't eat those cookies. I feel terrible. And that's the truth. You do feel terrible. I think that it's important to express that. It's important to tell her, you know, I do love your chocolate chip cookies, and I would love to eat them. And I feel absolutely horrible that I can't. You know, I abide by these laws, and in accordance with these laws, I cannot eat this. And I would try to stay away from entering discussion. I would try to keep things as general as possible. You're not coming to teach them Judaism. That's not your goal here. You're visiting Greece for a week, 2 weeks. Okay, so try to keep it general. What could they do? What can't they do? What's going to work and what's not going to work? And don't go into the details. Well, if you cook it and if you bake it and it goes back to marriage and it goes back to a time. No. There's absolutely no point. And it might even be prohibited. But let's leave that. That it might be prohibited. But there's no point. You're never going to be able to get them to understand.
I remember that just to express this scenario. My older mother, she on one hand was nearly paralyzed at the time. She baked my favorite chocolate cake in our kosher oven. But she, at the fire, I wasn't there to supervise everything. Now she's giving to me, okay? Her hands is in terrible pain, okay? I know that she told me she had all the ingredients of the kosher. Okay, the whole story, right? The oven was kosher, that was for sure. It was the only mother of the fire that she opened the fire. I'm sitting there. I take half the cake, I put it in my pocket to throw it away. The other half I put in my mouth, and then I run to the bathroom to spit it out. Rather than telling her no.
Good, okay.
I couldn't do it. Now, the question is you. I mean, what it would have been more preferable to...
No, if you could find an easy way out, get an easy way out.
It was an easy
right?
She was very sharp, but she didn't catch this
one. Okay, of course, if you could avoid conflict, you avoid it. No, I agree, for sure. It's like the stomach ache that I sometimes have.
But what you create a pattern already. She sees that there... I accept it, and then the next time it's even more difficult. She sees inconsistency, and then she starts questioning.
So that you have to think. That's a practical question. Okay. I mean, I don't know how often she's here. How often the question is going to come up? You're right, and I think it's also fair to tell them I wasn't holding there in the past, and now I am. I shouldn't have done it then. But I wasn't yet prepared. You know, I'm in a growing process. We don't have to play a game with them. We could be very honest with them. You know, I'm in a learning process and a growing process. And if last time I was here, when you guys went to the movies, I let you open the door and I sat in the car and I let you close the door and I let you pay and I sat in the movies with you. Well, this time I've learned a little bit more about what I'm supposed to be doing in life, and I'm not going to be able to do that. I shouldn't have done it then, but I didn't know it. You know, a person shouldn't feel like his past constricts him. And this is a tool you guys should get now. Because if not, you're going to have difficulty in marriage. Because then your in-laws are going to play that game too. But last year you were by us Pesach. But last year you guys had no problem coming to us all of Hanukkah for 8 days. You love us less this year. You have to learn in life to say, we love you, you're great. And last year was last year, and this year is this year, and this is where it's holding this year. It's a tool. You have to have that self-confidence. You cannot be bound by your past. It's inconsistent. I'm not consistent. I'm trying to grow. I try not to be consistently stuck where I was last year. Bemit. You can't let what happened last time you visited define what will happen this time. You've grown since then. They'll see you're inconsistent. Tell them that's true. You know, I'm in a growing process. I'm learning. I think so. I think.
With everything, you're still, even if it's not correct, you're still the ambassador for Judaism in Israel.
And you have no choice, right? But try to limit it and try to declare that you're not. I often say it, and I think you should say it too. You know, I can't represent all of Judaism. How long are you Jewish? How long have you known anything about Judaism? Let's be honest. And let's be honest with them too. You're taking something that's three and a half, 4 millennium old, and you're going to represent it after studying it for a number of years. Okay, that's very nice. It's not realistic. It's not realistic from all perspectives. So they'll tell you, how do you perform if you don't understand? You'll tell them that's part of Judaism.
The most frustrating is that then you end up presenting yourself to somebody who is not able to
I don't think so.
Stand up for his opinion and express
it. I don't think so. No.
You look irrational to them and backward. So it's almost like an obligation, you know, that you know that for the rest of your life they will see you in such a light.
I don't think so, because I think life is about more than the mitzvot. They'll see that in every other thing you're an intelligent person. The pasuk says, "Kihi chokhmatchem uvinatchem." Your wisdom, le'inei amim, in the eyes of the nation, are the statutes. So the Ramban in Torah Hashem Tmima, the chukim, it says, when it comes to the chukim, the laws, you don't understand anything. Why don't I eat pork? I don't know. Why don't I eat meat with milk? I don't know. So the pasuk says a phenomenal thing. The nations, it's in Devarim. I don't remember if it's in Akev. It's in Devarim. In the beginning of one of the parashiyos in Devarim, the pasuk says, "Kihi chokhmatchem uvinatchem le'inei ha'amim." This is your wisdom in the eyes of the nation. Asher yishmeu net kol ha'chukim ha'ele. They hear all these laws that don't seem to have a rationale behind them, the statutes. Ve'amiru, and then they'll declare, "Rakam chacham v'navon agoy ha'gadol hazeh." This great nation is wise beyond what we can understand. So you tell yourself, wait a second. My non-Jewish grandmother is going to ask me, why don't you eat pork? And I'll say, I don't know. And then she'll say, why don't you eat meat with milk? And I'll say, I don't know. And then she'll say, why don't you wear wool and linen? I got a nice Hugo Boss suit for you. And you'll say, I don't know. So how wise are you going to seem in her eyes? Explains the Ramban. If you met a doctor, and the doctor told you that if, in order to cure your situation, you have to stand on your head 5 times each day. Every 3 hours, you got to stand on your head during the day. So you'd say, what a quack. And you'd leave him. But if you met a doctor that the first time you came to him, you had something that no one else could cure, and he said, here, suck on this sugar cube. That'll resolve it. You suck on the sugar cube, it's resolved. You go to him a second time, you have a condition that no other doctor could cure, and he tells you, here, hold this pigeon for 15 minutes and you'll be cured. You hold it for 15 minutes, you're cured. The third time you come to him and you have a situation and he tells you, stand on your head, I'm telling you, 5 times a day for the next 3-4 days and you'll be cured, you'll say, gee, this guy's so smart, he's telling me things I could never understand. You'd look at the things that you don't understand and you'd say, you know why he's telling me all this? Because he's so much smarter than I am, that he has things that I don't begin to understand, but he's proven himself. The same thing applies to the Torah. There are so many mitzvot that are logical. There are so many mitzvot that we do understand, and they by far surpass any other religion. So then you come to the mitzvot that you don't understand, and you look at it and you say, wait a second, look at the whole system. In the whole system, it's already proven itself in the last few millennium. Look at who's been the most moral person in the world. The world was beating their wives. Look at what Judaism said about it. The world was abusing their kids. Look at what Judaism said about it. The world was taking advantage of one another, cheating, stealing, taking advantage of nations. Look at what Judaism said. Look at Judaism's consistency for millennium. Not centuries, millennium. We don't go with the times. You don't find that our morals have changed over time. We've been very consistent for over 3 millennia now. The whole world was doing things very different than us. Just compare. Take the most basic laws. The laws of a ger. How we treat a ger. The laws of a ger toshav. The laws of a servant. What we learned this week. The laws of how a woman is treated in Judaism. Just study basic things and look at how the world was treating other people and look at how we were treating other people. And then the more in depth you go, the more you'll see how fair Judaism is. Then you come on mitzvot that you don't have an answer for. So your relatives are going to ask you, well, why do you do this? And you don't have an answer. True, you don't have an answer. But you know what? If they're really fair, then they'll take it in perspective of everything else you do, and they'll say, must be something deep. You don't have to have all the answers. And I don't think that's how they'll judge you. Because there are so many things that do make sense, and the way you behave in every other area of your life, you'll be honest, you won't cut in line, you won't yell, you'll be fair, you'll be gentle. They'll see what a human being you are and how the Torah has developed you. So then in this area, right, so in this area you won't have an answer for them. Fine. If they're honest, they'll respect you for it. I'm not saying they'll admire you for it. Maybe that'll come with time, but they'll respect you for it. But I'd be very curious to hear. We've had already three questions now, and you guys all have experience that I don't have. So if you guys have other answers, I'm interested in hearing them. Okay, but what we will, the benefit we will have is that our listeners, Bezrat Hashem, will email in answers. We have listeners who are a step ahead of you guys, who have been to Mechon Mir and have been through this a few times, and I hope they will take the time to email in their tips. Just a second, David was first. Yeah.
I have a friend who's a friend named Nameless that I'm pretty close with, and anytime I talk to him online, it seems as if he doesn't intentionally provoke an argument, but it seems that that always happens. Like, two specific examples. He said, "You want to see my Hanukkah menorah?" I just said, "Sure." So he sent me a photo, and it was a big Xmas tree, him and his girlfriend, and his tiny little menorah, and that provoked like a huge argument. And another time, he sent me a photo as a joke. It said Hanukkah sale, and like a picture of like hams.
Hams.
Ham. Pork. Special of Hanukkah.
The hamstring of a pig.
Yeah.
People eat those. And it's like, I want to be close with him, but it's like he's pushing me away almost every time. Like, I don't know how to deal with this. It becomes really hard.
What would happen if you would try to talk to him straight about it? Try to have a conversation and say, "Hey, Jack, when can we talk for 5 minutes, a serious conversation?" And then bring it up and tell him, "Look, you did A and B, and I want you to know I felt it was unfair, and I really value our friendship, and I want to tell you how I feel about it. What do you think would happen if you did that?"
I think it would help. I
want us to pick up with friends, because we spoke about family, and in my opinion, a much bigger challenge is friends. And I want us to pick up with that, but I want us to pause now and go order pizza, and whoever wants, grab a drink. We have coffee, we have milk, we have sugar, and we'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, in 5 minutes, guys. Yeah? I just want to order the pizza before they close the shop.